All right. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here with us tonight. This is the meeting of the Community Services and Safety Committee. It is April 19th. I'm present here with Council Member Zaki Dunn. We will be joined a little bit later by Council Member Deshaun Quinn. The first item on our agenda tonight is a grant application for the King County 2021 Minor Home Repair Program, and Stacy Hansen will be addressing that tonight. Go ahead, Stacy.
Thank you, and good evening, everyone. So every year for the last 16 years, the City of Tukwila has been the lead city for the Minor Home Repair Program, which is a CDBG grant application that we apply due to the size of our city as a consortium with the cities of Covington, Des Moines, and SeaTac. And we are actually applying for the funding year of 2022. And basically what you see in the packet is the info memo, and also we have the pre-application that I have started, haven't quite finished and submitted, but we'll be doing that this week. And once we do the pre-application, prior to applying for the funds, I have to get authorization from the City Council allowing Mayor Ekberg to authorize this application, since that is part of the protocol for King County, but it is also a grant that has a value of $100,000, and that grant, should we receive it, will be split equally between the four partner cities for housing repairs in their city, and these funds come to us in January to February of 2023, so we spend these funds in the rears by 1 year. And I have some background and more detail, and I want to be really mindful of everybody's time tonight. But if you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them.
Council Member Edan, do you have any questions?
Yes, a quick question. I'm familiar with this. I don't have any other. I think it's a great program. But I'm curious, why can one city not apply? Why cannot the City of Tukwila not apply instead of joining with other cities? Can you address that a bit?
I'd be happy to. There is a minimum amount that you can apply for, and $50,000 is the threshold. So if each of the cities applied for $50,000, we'd be giving more than half of that back every year to the county, because we can't spend that much in a very short time frame that we have those funds allocated for. And so our application is more competitive because we hit the $100,000 marker and we have four cities applying. But it is a lot of work to apply and to manage the funds, and Tukwila is the lead city for this program.
A quick follow-up. I think one of the things that we usually use for this is home repair. Have you used this grant any other, but what is the allowable use, I guess, aside from what we usually use?
Well, for instance, the city has also applied for playground upgrades. They've used it for some sidewalk things requested in the past. So the county and the JRC looks at, the Joint Recommendation Committee look at all the applications, and they really want to make sure that it's well balanced throughout the county, and particularly South Kings County. So if you have other applications for these funds, then our application would be competing with another Tukwila application. So it is a very competitive process.
Okay. Yeah, so thank you. Appreciate those responses. If it's all right, I'm interested to see what are the allowable uses, for just a follow-up. And just for my information, or if you can direct me, And then one of the things I kind of grasped while you were talking is it takes a lot of time from staff to put together and also to manage it. I don't want to go into the details in that, but I kind of want to have a little bit more insight into what that looks like. So I appreciate it. Thank you. I don't have any other questions, Chair.
I can tell you, Councilmember Adan, that it takes between 25 and 30% of my time to manage this program. And I'm happy I made a note to myself to follow up on some of the other allowable uses. It's quite a wide range of applications that come through to use this, but I'll follow back up with you on that.
Thank you, Stacey.
Yes.
Have, in your recollection, because how many years has this program been going for now?
16.
Wow.
Yep.
And in the 16 years, has Tukwila ever applied, like, for more than one? So done the home repair, but also applied for maybe another CDBG grant?
Yes. Like I said, there was a playground modification a couple of years ago, and it was not funded, but this program was. So like I said, they will compete against each other.
Yeah. And then just a reminder for Zach, I took Deshaun's position on the JRC, and the committee members don't necessarily get involved in the choosing of the grants. Like we're later on in the approval process, the King County staff really looks into it and sort of ranks them. But if we've applied for another grant in the past while also doing this, I don't see a reason why we couldn't also do the same thing this year if we had a project that was ready. So, you know, when, Stacey, can you remind us when the application is due?
Yes. The pre-application is due on the 26th of I think it's the 26th of this month is the pre-application, which is what I'm working on right now. And then if you get approved and you move forward, then the full application is due May 30th or 31st. And I will backtrack a little bit and about who reviews that. And as a recipient of minor of the JRC, or excuse me, of the CDBG funding, we are obligated to participate in that review process. And I have had actually the privilege of being on the review team for all of the King County area, mostly focused on South King County. And I've looked at sidewalks, I've looked at playgrounds, I've looked at non-housing related repairs, because this is projects. But sewers, all kinds of things. And we, along with the King County staff pre-COVID, would go out and tour these sites. We review their applications and rank them. We look at the readiness to be able to spend the amount of funding in an appropriate timeline with what the county expectations are, as well as does an organization have the capacity to manage this labor-intensive process, because not everybody's quite ready for it. Some of our grassroots agencies aren't quite ready for it. But micro-enterprise is another part of this program. So, and I will be on the review team again this year.
Just a quick question. On the contract, so this will be a King County contract between the city. Okay. Yeah. So I just want to make it. I think what you're asking tonight is recommendation, correct? Yeah. So as someone who works for the county, I like to, you know, the minutes or the records to reflect that I'm recusing myself and don't. I'm not going to be recommending this item, but I do want to understand. So I'll follow up with you, Stacey, or phone call to understand the labor and what that really entails. I want to understand that. So I want to make that clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, you know, that's the reason why Councilmember Quinn is also not here. And what Laurel had recommended is that we actually send this item to the next regular meeting, not on consent.
Is David or someone from the staff here tonight in this meeting? Or Rachel?
David's here.
David. So David, why did not this item not go to another committee? Why did it end up being, because we only want to have one council member that could, you know, and you need like at least two to move it forward.
Yeah. It was a unique circumstance, Councilmember Udon. You're right that we probably could have sent it, but per council policies, this is where this gets sent. Okay. So we could have asked earlier to, usually it's a very administrative because it's just it's a proposal to apply for the grant. You're not even accepting the grant at this time. Okay. So it's very early on in the process. So okay. Next time we'll work on this better. So thanks.
Yeah, we don't want to waste our time or space or the staff time. So it'd be good to figure out where, if you could go to another committee tonight. Is the next one the same? Is it the county related contract? Next item?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah, so we have the same situation. So I don't know what you want to do, Cynthia.
If we can't even, like, move it forward, it's sort of like almost a waste of time when maybe it also will follow. Let me see.
David, what's the solution here?
Move it to another committee and we'll bring it back. So let's take it off this committee and put it on a committee because your council rules allow you to put it to whatever committee you would like. And so we can work with the council president and find another appropriate committee to do it. So, okay.
Could it go to finance? Or Jack on finance, but at least Cassie.
Then, you know, I'll be sitting on the back getting involved. I'm on finance.
It might make sense to send it to send them to finance.
David, are you fine with that?
I'm fine with that, but you can put it to any committee that you'd like. I mean, per council policy, when we're accepting, this is in the grant application process, and so per council policies is that you can go to one committee and get you just need three council members to allow us to apply for a grant per your current policies. So it can go to any committee. It could go to the full council because all seven council members could allow us to apply for the grant as well. I think that was the process that was recommended on this one is to bring it to a regular meeting. All seven council members would allow us to apply for the grant and you would still be within your council policies. Alternatively, you could just bring it to another committee and get three council members, majority.
Two or three?
I have to look at the council policies. I think it just says the committee. So I would think it needs to be at least two of the three committee members. So,
Cynthia, so that's how you want to.
Yeah.
You could push it through the whole council, or you could, like you suggested, it can go to finance. And I think, you know, there's you and Cassie there. It should be fine if both of you guys concur.
Rick, are you on the line?
Yeah.
When do you need an answer by? To be able to move forward with the grant application?
The grant has already been applied for. They just need they want us to be a partner instead of a supporter. So it's just a process that needs to be done in the next month. It only takes council action via council policy, not from the funding agency. So we don't need a resolution at this time. We just need your blessing to apply for a grant. That's all it is.
Here's my recommendation. Let's send the Parks and Rec grant to finance because Kathy and I could review it and you know, make a recommendation on it. Laurel already mentioned that the home repair should, you know, a good course of action is to move that one to the regular, the next regular meeting, and it not be on consent. So we will do that. And Rick, you could save your presentation. Hopefully you could make it to the Finance Committee meeting next week.
That's too bad. It was a really good presentation.
You were ready.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Stacy. I'm sorry that there's this mix up. It literally probably was from something that happened this weekend that created this sort of mix-up. So there's no way that we could have, you know, better planned for this. But thank you both. All right. Is someone going to tell Deshaun to come back?
I just sent him an email.
Okay, great. I'm looking at the other items, and there's no conflicts here. So let's give a moment for Deshaun to join us back.
Hopefully these things will be flagged as we see them come in.
I agree with you, council member. We'll do a better job. And also working with the council president for your council policies, I think that the council president, Ms. Humphreys, can tell us exactly what the council policies are. If she gets flagged, to put it in a different committee as well.
Yeah.
No, thank you, David.
I think I saw Deshaun. Deshaun, are you with us now?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. We are on agenda item number C, an update on regional efforts toward mental health services. And Chief Drever, do you want to start this one off?
Yeah, I thought I'd mention that we also have Commander Rock here. He's been our lead on our mental health professional and navigator programs. And so I'm going to defer to him on this one. However, this has been an ongoing project with several of the local agencies to co-apply for a grant that would supply some mental health co-response as a on-call response for Valley agencies. And so we're excited to be a partner with this. It's about to go live. And so with that, I would pass off to Commander Rock so he can give you a quick brief.
Thank you. And happy to be back with the group. Last time I was here, we discussed the Tukwila program that we're working on and getting ready to implement. And as I started working on that program with members of Sound Mental Health and with members of the department, I learned that there was a subcommittee that had been formed in Olympia regarding looking at how we could better serve people who suffer from mental illness and addiction. And not surprisingly to me, after months of working on the program, a regional team has been formed. And like Chief Drever said, they're about to go live. Really to no surprise, it's actually similar to the Tukwila program that I briefed you on last month. So it's called the Mental Health Field Response Team. And this team consists of a mental health professional and two navigators. So the mental health professional is a person that would go out during either normal business hours or being called in off duty. And they would go in to de-escalate a situation, a person in crisis. They'll look for less restrictive alternatives to either jail or hospitalization. The navigators are kind of that wraparound service where they'll be able to provide follow-up care services that they may not otherwise get. The Tukwila program, basically, we're doing the same thing. So We're going to provide that mental health professional. And while we don't have navigators, we have Sound Mental Health who will assist with the follow-up care and making sure that people get the care, follow-up treatment, kind of close that loop that they may not otherwise get. So the program through the Valley agencies, it is basically all Valley agencies. So these three people will be taking care of Des Moines, Algona, Auburn, Black Diamond, Federal Way, Kent Pacific, Renton, and Tukwila. So that's like 856 square miles. It's going to be difficult to do with just those people. So it's important that we maintain our track too, because we'll be able to provide a better service for our community members in the meantime. They are currently a 6-month program. So when it goes live, it's going to be 6 months. So it'll be reassessed at that time, and they'll either reapply for another grant or go to the state for more funding in other ways. Their funding right now is through the Washington State Healthcare Authority. And just to remind you, our funding is from federal seizure funds. It's not going to cost our city anything. Any cost overruns will be taken care of by Sound. So I think it's going to be a great partnership where we're both pilot programs. I think that we can utilize their services as we get ours up and running, and we can work collaboratively and maybe work on getting resources that one organization, one team may not have that the other has. So that's a little bit about the program. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask.
Councilmember Quinn, do you have any questions?
Yeah, super high level. I'm glad to see this program come about. And I think what I would be interested in, if there was any thought put into it around the seizure funds, kind of at the end of this pilot process, maybe having some recommendations that come out around funding. And then secondly, I think there's been general talk about wraparound services, and I think also the information would be relevant, whether it be for our state legislative agenda or, you know, budget considerations. So I'm just wondering, at the kind of conclusion of the pilot, being able to lift up those recommendations. So I guess in a question, we're all being more informed because we have to, right? Because our society, going back to when Chief Linton said, it's a societal problem. I think we have to be more informed just because of the critical nature. And then I would just say that the behavioral health stuff. So having a set of recommendations that potentially come out at the other end of this pilot or mid-year or whatever the approach would take. So I'm just wondering if there was thoughts in that space.
I can tell you that there have been discussions, Councilmember Quinn, regarding what we're going to do after the Tukwila pilot program is up. And what we're hoping to do is actually reach out to the community. And maybe there are some private businesses that would want to get on board with a program like this. We're looking for community partnerships all over the place. So I'm hoping that we could bring them in. And it's a conversation that that Sound and myself have had. So I appreciate the question.
Yeah, and I can elaborate even further on the regional effort. This is just a 6-month program, And we realize that by the time we get it up and running, those funds will probably be depleted. And so we're already utilizing the grant manager to try and find other funding sources so that we can continue it beyond the 6-month period as it relates to the regional team. And we'll have more to come back to this committee on as we find out the answers to your questions.
If I could, I just would, I mean, I think it's going to be a richness of information that, yes, we could share with community partners, community that have concerns, and then legislators and others around what can we do. And so my hope is that the recommendations or at the conclusion of the pilot or whatever are wrapped up in that space. And then the last thing I would say is that, let's say for hypothetical, if you've had an interaction, and I could see that there would be some concern about what happens. And so I want to thank you for articulating the steps of this group of what happens. Because in the end, I think I heard it said best that we're kind of all in this together. And you know, how do we all make sure each other are whole, even those that are running into some challenges? And I think we're starting to see it in many different ways. So I think a lot of this information would be informative, whether it be the isolation in the pandemic and how you de-escalate or even learn. And then just the being able to recognize and all those things that you can learn from this pilot.
Thanks, Deshaun. Zach, do you have any questions?
No, I don't have any questions. I think this is a great program. Go ahead and I think it's just an update. I appreciate you coming down here and look forward to the next steps. Thank you.
Thank you.
Since we have you, Commander Rock, where are we right now with Tukwila's program?
So we are finalizing our contract. I believe that Sound and Tukwila were on the same page, so it's just a matter of language. My hope is that this will be, well, we'll have to go to council, of course, but once everything's been approved, I hope to have this up and running by mid-May.
Nice. But I think we all want to see this be successful, and thank you for letting us know about the regional efforts. My worry is that it's not enough to cover all of those all of those cities, and so I'm just glad that Tukwila is doing one just for our own city. Hopefully that could help inform, you know, the other cities, but that, like you said, that we could also benefit from what they're doing and learning from what they're doing as well. Learning and teaching all at the same time.
Sure.
But yeah, thank you so much. I don't have any further questions. Zach or Deshaun, do you have any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The next item on our agenda is Chief Drever, the first quarter police department report.
Yeah, so I believe that you would have been sent the PowerPoint presentation. However, let me bring it up on screen here. Can everybody see the presentation?
Yep.
Okay. So as it relates to highlights for the first quarter, we've got staffing. We've got two net new record specialists in Charlon Quintana, who started on January 4th, and Noe Gonzalez, who started on March 1st. Both of our record specialists are most of the way through their, or I should say, Charlon's most of the way through her training and about to be let out on her own so she can be a full-time contributor to the front office staffing scheduling and know he's about halfway through his training. We have a new officer, Carlos High, who started on January 11th and is currently in the academy with us. We also, on February 16th, had Mindy Madison as our new emergency manager for the city start, and she is working with myself and fire and other people that have worked with the emergency management for the city to identify where our program is at so that we can get it up to speed and meet compliance with state requirements so that we can be able to apply for grant funding related to emergency management, as well as just make sure the city is overall prepared for emergency preparedness. We also had the confirmation of the police chief position, my position, back on March 15th. And on the 16th, the mayor the next day swore me in so I could act upon those, my new position. I officially took office of the full-time chief on April 1st, however. We had several recognitions. We had several recognitions during the last town hall. We do a monthly town hall, and in February, we did recognition of several life-saving awards, 20-year and 30-year distinguished service awards. We actually had two department members. Three department members that hit their 30 years of service to the community. We also recognized our employees of the quarter, as well as we had two recognitions where we gave out a chief's coin to two of our staff for exceptional service that they had provided just in their day-to-day operations. As it relates to community engagement, we had the community police team that continued with their homeless camp checks and monitoring. We've had several calls come in regarding some encampments along the trails, along the river. So we've been focusing on getting in and looking at those encampments, as well as working with Public Works and Parks as it relates to the potential for cleanup of those sites. Our community policing team is also actively engaged with the Foster Point neighborhood with regular virtual meetings with them. Items being addressed included several abandoned cars that have already been towed, suspicious activity near the Baker Commodities, and municipal code violations related to a couple of the residences there. So we're also working with code enforcement. I meet monthly with the school superintendent, Dr. Herndon, and we've met a couple times in addition to that to address the possibility of bringing the school resource officers back to schools as they get students back in class. Most likely, as there's community concern that has arisen out of the school resource officer positions, we're trying to address those concerns before we put officers back in the school. So most likely, if we see a return of officers, it won't be until the fall school starts, where right now we're almost the end of this current school year. So we're going to enter and engage in conversations. I've set up appointments with school students or students of the school so that I can hear from them. We're also working on setting up meetings with the faculty as well as parents so we can identify what their true need is as it relates to law enforcement at schools. I attend COPCAB monthly meetings, where the main focus of those meetings over the last couple months has to have been focused on the deployment of our community survey. We have finished that up. We're in the process of converting the survey to different languages to meet the different needs of the community. And hopefully in the next 2, maybe 3 weeks, we should actually have our survey deployed. Right now we're just waiting on some business cards that have links to the survey. And we're also getting stickers printed that we're going to put on the actual cards, patrol cars that have the QR code that would then give link to the actual survey. So all you'd need is a smartphone and put your camera on the QR code and it sends you straight to the link. And that'll allow for community members to provide feedback regarding department services. Community Liaison Matt Valdez and Sergeant Anderson met with employees of the Spice Bridge Multi-Ethnic Food Bazaar on Tukwila International Boulevard in January. Everybody was masked for a socially distanced discussion regarding general safety tips and security awareness. Sergeant Anderson and Commander Rossi had virtual meetings with Dr. Helgott from the Seattle University, who is the director of the Crime and Justice Research Center, regarding adapting the public safety survey and associated community dialogues for the Tukwila. So the idea behind the Seattle University coming in is they have the ability to take the data from the survey and apply it towards our analytics to find out where we might best be able to provide services to the community. So we are still waiting on discussions regarding that potential partnership because there is a cost associated with that. Right now, we're just trying to get a greater understanding of how they might best meet our needs for us to make a sound decision on whether or not we want to spend those funds. Deputy Chief Lund attended the theft third and mall safety teams. He's handled that responsibility for me as I've been working with the regional partners and chiefs on a weekly basis that ends up overlapping this meeting that I would normally be sitting in on. So he's taken over the team's diversion program for the department, and they're working on finding better ways of working with the mall and the youth on that particular diversion program. On May 5th, we met with the Museum of Flight Management team to discuss security matters for them as it relates to the potential of security and protests that might happen on their property. We also had Detective Koonsman meeting with the manager of the Days Inn Motel regarding criminal activity occurring on the property and discussing next steps. We have since then put together an emphasis to address issues that are currently going on at the Days Inn. There's one particular subject that seems to be a repeat offender there, as well as some offenders that are going into the 76 station next door and committing theft. So we've been working with the property owner there as well. Deputy Chief Lund and Sergeant Harris, along with Officer Hines, Sergeant Harris and Officer Hines are our DT instructors and their use of force subject matter experts. They met with three community representatives to discuss our use of force policy and training and went over all of the use of forces for 2020. They reviewed all body footage and body camera footage and reports from 2020, for which we had 54 uses of force in 2020. So that report's going to be coming out here shortly, and we hope to present to the council the 2020 use of force report, which included community representatives sitting in on the review of those reports. We then hope to do it on a quarterly basis, where we do the review quarterly, so it's not such an undertaking. And then at the end of the year, provide our annual report to council, and it's also for accreditation. So we should have that shortly within the next couple of weeks for council. The community policing team also assisted the Sabie Corporation with their properties by analyzing crime activity and providing security assessment. This information will be shared with the patrol division as the patrol department works collaboratively to assist the Sabie Corporation in curbing future criminal activity on their properties. They were appreciative. We did SEPTED, which is community policing through environmental controls, and finding ways for them to help out with deterring crime on their properties. Then we also had detectives continuing to engage and assist in activities with the Abu Bakr Mosque and the Riverton Church during the first quarter. So the department's been holding town hall meetings on a monthly basis. It's been a great opportunity for us to engage with the department as a whole. We've had great attendance. We keep moving the meeting around to make sure we give opportunities for each shift and each time frame to join in on the meetings. We have found that the greatest success of attendance is somewhere around 5 or 6 o'clock at night between shift changes. And we've been getting about half the department on a regular basis. The last town hall had about a quarter of the department, but we record the town hall meetings and the conversations and make them available so that anybody that misses the group meeting has an opportunity to participate and hear of what went on and what transpired and what questions got asked and what answers were given so that we can maintain communications and stay informed as a department as a whole. Excuse me, just one second. I want to shut my door. It got open. I apologize for that. We had somebody talking out in the lobby there. I also attend monthly meetings with the King County Chiefs. We meet also as a local valley agencies on a weekly basis. It started off as a means for staying on top of COVID and seeing what other agencies are doing to address the issues that have been coming up. We've decided it was valuable enough. We've continued those meetings. So for locally among valley agencies of Renton, Auburn, Port of Seattle, Tukwila, Des Moines, and Federal Way, we meet on Wednesdays for an hour where we sit and share information and have pass on. But then monthly, we go over our ops board meeting where we get to hear of the work that's being done by VNet, SWAT, VIT, PSAT, SCORE, and all of our regional agencies where we've combined our groups of working together. We hear report outs and briefs on a monthly basis to make sure that they're staying on track with their programs. The Records Division has moved several boxes of case files to the Justice Center from the Records Annex. They've met with the City Clerk's Office regarding records storage at City Hall, and the Evidence Unit has moved all vehicles to the old Fire Station 51, which has been turned over for the offsite facility to the property management group, or I should say the old property evidence storage has been turned back over to the property management group. So we no longer are in our evidence facility where we were storing all of our evidence before moving to the Justice Center. So we are completely moved in as it relates to our record storage move. We've received 789 new public disclosure requests between January 1st and March 31st. 779 of them have been closed. We have 10 that are open and actively being worked on. Those tend to be the ones that draw considerable more work with body-worn cameras. We have to review all of the footage before we release it, so those take longer. The community police team worked in hotspot areas on Tukwila National Boulevard, Interurban, and West Valley, and actively assisted Washington State Patrol, the Valley Narcotics Enforcement Team, and Valley Auto Theft Task Force on several ongoing investigations. Some of them have been made public already through the PD incidents. So when we have SWAT teams that are called out and there's the potential for media involvement, and or if we cause disturbance in an area because we have a show of personnel in an area and it draws attention, we'll send out a PD incident to make sure that you're all updated and aware of the activity that's going on. Our TAC team and our crime prevention team, our community policing team personnel continue to conduct investigations on targeted narcotics activity in the city, and our professional standards unit continues to work diligently on the department accreditation process, where we are hoping here for the fall in the November conference, they accredit agencies in the spring and in the fall. We are trying to accredit for the fall, so we hope to have all of the process in place for us to be able to do a mock assessment here as we reach the end of the summer, which then puts us in position for us to be a fully accredited agency again come the fall. So these charts are showing you the quarterly crime statistics, which if you look at the line chart with the dots, that's showing where we are so far for the quarter versus the prior year. So the bars going vertical, those are the crime reports for the prior year. However, you can see that we are below where we were the prior years. And we believe a lot has to, of that just has to do with COVID. If you remember, we were just entering COVID in the first quarter, at the end of the first quarter last year. So we still had January and February where we had a lot of the normal activity, where it then dropped as we move forward into this year. In January, February, and March, you can see it's all below what it was last year. And we directly correlate that to COVID. Aside from that, it's not too far out of the parameter of what we would consider norm. So I know that was a mouthful, and I know you have other things on the agenda. That's why I kind of rushed through that. But if you have any questions or anything I can follow up on, please ask away. And I will try and close the window so you can see me.
Thank you so much, Chief. That was an excellent report. I have to say that was really comprehensive and I really appreciated it. So council members, council member Quinn, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I read the report. I would agree with the committee chair, very thorough. I will be looking towards the next quarter to see if there's trends. There was a lot there, so maybe a parting question, and I would say probably don't have to spend much time, but there have been a lot more community meetings working with folks to understand how they can reduce maybe things that they are experiencing. So I'm going to make an assumption, so maybe I can just make this a yes or no. My assumption is seeing these meetings go up and outreach into the community, would it be fair to say that there will be more to go to come and the trend will continue?
The trend of the outreach efforts? Most yes. Definitely, yes. And as you pointed out, this next quarter is going to be the one to watch because that's where we're comparing COVID-related time to COVID-related time. So, and our hopes would be that as we push further into further quarters, that outreach efforts, we do show a further reduction in the incidence of crime happening as it relates to us and our outreach efforts, and quite honestly, the community's efforts as they take that information and use it to their advantage.
And I guess I would add the trend thing and COVID to COVID, the world had shifted because of the pandemic, and so has maybe approaches and access to people. And so I'll be looking for that as well as things change and reaching people, right? And letting them know you're there and available and all that stuff.
Yep.
Council Member Edan.
Thank you. I think I also agree it was a good report. I just have one or two questions that I just want to see if I could get clarification around it. So when we say hotspot investigations, what's significant? Why are they hotspots? What kind of triggers for those areas for hotspots? And what's the inclusion of that? I'm just trying to get a broad perspective around the three that's laid out here.
So hotspots refer to areas that are drawing resources away from the city, whether it's code enforcement and or the police department, parks and rec. A good example would be some of the homeless encampments that we have along the river right now. That's a hotspot because one, we have community members in need that need resources that are camping in an area where it's not safe or becomes a public health issue, and so we need to address the problem, and that becomes a hotspot just because of the nature of it involving resources of the city to try and address. Other hotspots could be flare-ups, for instance. Right now, another hotspot is the Days Inn. Days Inn is drawing a lot of calls for service that are beyond what we would expect from a business of that size. And so we're currently creating an emphasis to address it as a hot spot and potentially even look at it as a nuisance property and using the nuisance ordinance to address it. And a lot of that really has been over activity has been over the last couple of weeks where it's coming to a head, and we've identified it as an emphasis here at the beginning of this second quarter. So you'll be hearing more about that.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked that question because I have a little bit more clarity now. The other thing is I'm trying to understand the graphic and let's see if I...
Let me pull it up.
I was going to pull it up. So
oh.
Do you see my screen now?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So here is the number of incidents, and here's the time.
Yes, or case reports.
Case reports, okay. So what is the difference between the bottom and the top?
So the calls for services by month are showing that we're getting, in January, we're getting on average between 2,500 to almost 3,000 here in January. And then here in February, we're getting somewhere between 2,300 and 2,700 calls for service. The bottom one is the case report. So I misspoke. So the bottom one is case reports. So calls for service represent phone calls to 911, where we then have to respond or at least acknowledge that there's something going on and we provide a disposition code. The case reports, if you look, are smaller batches. So for January, you're looking at about 750 to just over 800. So based upon 2,500 to 2,900 calls, of those calls, we only took between 750 and 820 roughly cases. And this is showing you a bandwidth for that time. This is showing between 2000 and 2020, this is your expected range that you would normally get in January, somewhere between 75 and 800. The dot in this line is showing we actually only had 630 or so reports during that time frame.
Okay. Yeah, the other question, thank you, Chief. The other question I had is the range on when, like we're using 2000 to 2020. Is there a reason why we're going that way back?
So I've asked this question of our crime analyst, and we can present the information in whatever way best suits the council. However, this is just showing the trend over time, and this is how long we've been capturing information. And so we can potentially give comparison to a like more recent time. It's just, this is just showing you holistically over time exactly what you can expect for a range. And the longer the time frame you use, the more accurate the range, because you the spikes have minimal impact on the average.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not a statistical person, so I'm just curious as if you know, five or I don't know. I'm just kind of speaking out loud here. If five makes sense, or if going back all the way to 2000 makes sense. I'm either way fine with that, but I just question why we need to go back a little bit there. I yield back. Thank you. That's all I had.
Deshaun, do you want to say something? Do you have a
yes.
question?
Yeah, and it's with humility and also understanding. I've been here a little bit, and so I've been around for some discussions. And so one of the considerations is, you know, sometimes community says, it seems like there's way more crime than, you know, before we annex this section of the city. And it allows you to show a trend that's wide enough and then data to say, no, actually, here's where we are. So that's a consideration. And then there were definitely points along 2000 to now where I think if we wanted to measure outputs and have we gotten it better by some of the policy decisions that we made, we have a range to look at that as well. So that's just, I'm just sharing that as a someone that's been around for some of the conversations, some of the trends, some of the challenges that I think has been seen before.
Thank you. So I don't really have questions. I just wanted to share. I know we all started off by like, that was a really comprehensive report, and I hope you don't take that in a bad way. I hope you see it as a good thing, because, you know, some things that I caught is the amount of community engagement that you and your officers have been involved in, just being open to transparency through research, trying to learn from the community about what their concerns are, you know, this partnership with Seattle U and trying to analyze the data so that you could better understand what recommendations there are in terms of better ways to partner with the community. And then I think it's amazing that of the 789 public disclosure requests, only 10 are still open. I just want to say that this is a lot, and it's only the first quarter. So kudos to you, Chief. I guess I do have one question, and it's really just, you know, you started in April, your official duties as chief. And I'm just curious, like, what do you hope to bring into the agencies? Like, what are your top priorities right now?
Well, I hope you also realize that I didn't start working on priorities waiting for April 1st. I've been working on these things for the last 6 months. Right now, the mayor has asked that I provide a 90-day community engagement plan for moving forward. And that isn't a plan on, this is ABC, how we're going to do things, right? It's a plan to put together information gathering on how we can best serve this community and do it through engagement. And so I already have that draft presented to the mayor. He's asked me to make some modifications. I have worked on this with my entire leadership team. So we've met as an entire leadership team, which is sergeants and above, for us to address how we can best meet the community's needs. And it falls down to three things when it comes to community engagement. And it begins with transparency and accountability, because we need to be transparent about our processes, our policies, our operations. How do we do things, right? And then it comes down to accountability. Because we can be transparent and tell you about everything we're doing, but if we aren't holding ourselves accountable for when we make mistakes or when we recognize that things could be done better, and we are putting measures in place that then create trust of the community in its police department, because one, we're being transparent about it, and two, we're holding ourselves accountable. Things like getting ourselves accredited so that we are maintaining the best practices in law enforcement for policies, procedures, and the way we do things. And we then get audited based upon whether or not we're actually doing it. And we don't get accredited if we're not meeting those standards. So those are means of creating trust so that when we do our community engagement, and that's the third prong, is that the actual engagement, there's a level of trust and base for us and the community to be able to believe that when we say we're doing something or that we want to help, that they then believe us when we tell them. And when you've got a national narrative that is anti-cop, and that's not, I recognize that's not everybody, but when we have a Tukwila Police Department that is truly looking out for the best interests of its community, we need to find ways to overcome that national narrative. And quite honestly, it's not just Tukwila. This region, all of the Valley Chiefs who I meet with on a regular basis, we all have the same philosophy of transparency and accountability, and then engaging with the community so that we can not only meet the needs, but find out what those needs are. So I'm excited as we finalize this getting that to the council so that they can see what it is we're actually working on, what we plan to work on, which also includes including the community in our processes. We just did a victim advocate interviews today for the chief's interviews. So they go through the civil service process and an oral board panel, which consisted of some other victim advocates and personnel within the department, forwarded on the best candidates. And in this instance, we also included in the chief's interview a community representative. And we plan on doing that in all of our hiring from now on so that we can get input from the community. We're going to be putting out a posting that asks for people to apply for a volunteer roster of community members that we can use on a regular basis. So we've got a deep bench for being able to provide that level of transparency of involving the community in our process. In this case, since we didn't have a list generated yet, we utilize a member from COPCAB. I know all of you probably know him. I use Tosh Sharp this go around. And all of the other COPCAB members they're excited about getting involved as well until we actually establish the roster. And this adds that level of transparency so they can see exactly how we go about making the decisions on who are going to be the people that serve this community. So I'm giving you way too much more than you asked for, because I'm really excited about where this department is going with that. So bringing it up full circle, the future of this department depends on the engagement that it has with its community, but none of that means anything if we don't have that transparency and accountability. So over the last 6 months, I've put processes in place that create that transparency and accountability, and we're putting an engagement plan together so that we can create more of that and put a roadmap together for future transparency and accountability, and making it so that that engagement is that much more valued.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was... That is great, and I hope that we as council members could just be there to support. I'm excited. I'm excited right. That you're excited.
I'm going to hold you to that one.
Yeah.
Don't be surprised when you get the phone call now.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chief Reaver.
Thank you, everybody. I appreciate your time.
All right. The last item on our agenda is an update on the Advisory Task Force project. Chief Whitwer, or who's speaking to this one? Okay, there you are.
Start it out for sure. Council Member Johnson, I appreciate the introduction. So I'm Jay Whitwer, the fire chief. I have Deputy Chief Golden with us this evening, and President Booth from the union is also present, or at least he was earlier. So we have been working together on this. I will go ahead and bring up the memo, and at least we can have that on the screen. Are you able to see that memorandum in front of you? Okay, so we'll just go through this real quickly. I promise not to take more than 15 minutes total, so we'll have a little break before council meeting tonight. So to begin with, this is a continuation. 2 weeks ago, we met with you and discussed this, the fire department sustainability plan. We are now proposing that this is going to be named the Advisory Task Force. So that's our internal working group that we have discussed. This memorandum and the subsequent to follow the charter, we did listen, we made some changes to that, and I hope that all of you have had a chance to read over this, and I'll just cover quickly some of those changes that we made or adjustments. So reading through this, just the issues, the background, the discussion, we did change some of the wording there to better reflect what you all have told us, and that this group will work closely with the City Council and Community Services and Safety Committee members, as well as Tukwila staff from other departments, to make sure that we're getting input and leveraging their information and knowledge. The next green highlighted area is the group will research and evaluate other teams. That was one of the asks, and we definitely have that on our list. So we will look to make sure that we are creating a value-driven process. So that's our first page. Any questions on that first page, or would you like me just to go through it and then have questions at the end?
Maybe just go through it and then questions at the end.
That'll work. The next is at the top of page 52. Purpose will include such a large and diverse set of experts and stakeholders. This is for that advisory task force that we're talking about. And we really want to create a co-creative space to allow for this collaborative development that will assist us to achieve the primary goals. This is all covered on the fifth, and then of course recommendations. We just reworded that to better reflect what we had talked about on the fifth. Our idea is to get approval from you this evening of this memo and the charter to follow, and we would want that to be presented to the Council of the Whole on the 26th. Of course, we one of the main asks is that we want to begin to compile this list of folks that will make up the task force. So recruiting would start immediately in May, and then we would bring that back to this committee for discussion. Wow, that went by pretty fast. So this is the first page of the charter on page 53. Now the charter, we did make a few adjustments to that, again, according to what was discussed with with this committee on the 5th. And that would start out, of course, our chartering document, and that is for the advisory task force. The official name would be Fire Advisory Task Force. And I think that's one of the things we really want to settle on this evening so that we can just move forward. Again, this is a document that was shared on the 5th, and here's some of the objectives that we enhanced, shared a value-driven process, a co-created work plan. Of course, data that is used for informed analysis, some of the words that we captured during our meeting with all of you. And one of the things that we definitely want to do are have city council representatives, and of course working close with our council president and the council of the whole in making those decisions. And then, of course, participation from the city council representatives are recommended based on specific roles of the council members. One of the things we want to definitely do is take into consideration some of the past history and information that our council members have and hold, and being able to add so much better understanding for that task force. Many of the words such as collaborative development that's necessary, some of those things we definitely captured from our meeting with you on the 5th. The expected duration, of course, that is very fluid. We had put in 2022 to 2023 and then added a year there. Of course, again, I just want to state that is very fluid and can change as we move forward. The scope, again, just some words to better define what the council is asking. So informed decisions instead of driven decisions. And then the final page. We want to be sure that we want to make sure that the charter did include these things, and this was included in on the 5th as well. So the union negotiations and then eliminating certified firefighters, that's out of the scope of the fire advisory task force. And then, of course, the last page is just the team members. Now, we aren't necessarily recommending that we have as many as 14 on the team. We would like it to stay in a manageable size for the group so that we could keep the processes moving forward. The last thing is just basically the reporting hierarchy. The team will seek to build a collaborative environment that fosters creative and innovative thinking and that honors the perspectives and ideas of all members. So that wraps up our report. I would like Chief Golden to weigh in, and he is going to just bring up a couple of the things that we have been working on over the last month, just to give you a quick update. So I will stop sharing this unless you'd like me to keep it on the screen so that we could refer back to it.
I think you could probably take it off because we have copies of it too. Good to see people's faces.
Excellent. Yeah, I agree.
Okay, thanks, Chief Webber, and thank you, committee members. This is something that we listened to what the committee had to say. You provided some great direction to narrow down, to make it real easy. What we're looking for is approval of our charter to make sure we're going the right direction, and ask for approval to set up this task force. We've had lots of ideas and lots of individual meetings offline to try to figure out what the committee wants to see, the council committee, and how to best get that information. What we came up with is there's a lot going on. It's making us look internally at some things that we need to address. And so as far as the timeline, what we're thinking is, bring this information forward and let the council set the priorities and the timeline. Like what I heard about the data informed, bring all that to the table. There's tons of data in there, but we wanted a task force that could help interpret that data. A lot of it is, jargon that applies only to the fire service. A lot of it is going to still have to do with financial way cities run and the way fire districts run and potential legislation out there that allows different taxing. And so we really do need, experts, not to put it on like, David Klein is a guy that knows a lot about what can happen, what other people are happening, and just his group of city managers and things like that. There's a rich pool to say, what was your experience? And as we started looking at what questions are going to be asked, we realized we need a very diverse team of experts that have done this type of work that quickly recognize, what is doable, what is something that is locally regional, meaning something we could do in Tukwila, and we want to bring those forward. So I'm hoping that we have narrowed it down for you enough to provide further direction. I wanted to be available to answer any questions on what we've done. We've all kind of chipped in to change that charter to meet what we heard at the last meeting. And it really is exciting to start thinking about some of the changes we at least could be proposing, because it's fun to think about how to drive our service levels further and farther up to serve our community. So with that, I'd just say that I'm available for any questions or comments from the council or any of the staff.
Thank you. Councilmember Edan, do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. But before I ask my question is, I've heard there's a lot of interest from other council members on this I wonder if, because this is a committee recommendation, just accepting the charter right now, if it would add a value to bringing this up to, I don't know, maybe tonight's reports, if you want to report out, Cynthia, some, what I've heard is some folks didn't know this was kind of, was discussed in this committee, and you know, especially want to know what's kind of happening, so I just wanted to throw that out there. Did you want to respond?
Or? Yeah, I could respond to that real quickly. The idea is to get approval from this committee to take it to the Council of the Whole on the 26th. We won't start recruiting for the task force or move forward with that until we have the Council of the Whole weigh in on it.
Yes, I understand that. I was just letting Cynthia know if she can report it out tonight.
That's a great idea.
The question I have is the out of scope, the second bulletin, and I'm not advocating either to take it out, just for my understanding, what is, you know, certified firefighters, and why are we not including in the scope?
I can probably address that, Chief, if that's okay. And so what we're trying to do is recognize that anytime we talk about these issues, there could be permissive or mandatory areas of bargaining. That's why I think one of the smart things that we're doing is including IAFF 2088 local president James Booth, and let them know what we want to do is provide information, and all that information, all the different things, you know, to really present things to the council and say, these are things we're doing, and not get caught up in saying we're trying to change the current collective bargaining agreement, or we're not trying to avoid meeting and conferring about issues. And we've already had preliminary talks with the local. We're drafting some sort of document. We kind of call it in negotiations, you know, a what-if scenario where it's a safe space, where we agree we're not trying to renegotiate, but we want to be open to all ideas. And that's been really successful.
So it's a collective bargaining?
The issue is that we have an existing collective bargaining agreement. And we're not trying to disturb that. By all of us agree that we're not trying to disturb that. Maybe it's easy for an example. Let's say that we are going to decide the best way to present to provide fire services is to have a single fire station, and we respond out of that station. That would take opening of the collective bargaining agreement and negotiating. We're saying that would be down line once we decide what options are there. We're not trying to. Neither side is trying to make negotiations now. We're just wanting to do informational to the council members to get direction. Does that make sense?
For me, I think, you know, I'm coming in the space of I'm trying to really understand what a certified firefighter is and why it's out of scope. And to me, it sounds like it's a collective bargaining issue. That's why we're pulling it out, just as we're pulling out the union negotiation. It's not clear when I'm reading that. That's why I'm asking those clarifying questions. And I think it's a great idea what you guys are doing. I would just put something that says collective bargaining, either parentheses or before that. You know, as I look at it, you know, it still fits into this first bulletin because it captures it. But if you want to be explicit, I think I'll just put something extra to explain that. I
understand. Great. And I understand your point, and we certainly that's something that we can clarify and work on and jointly agree to.
Councilmember Quinn.
I don't have any questions. I know this is the second run at this. It looks consistent to what we discussed, and I would just the overarching comment is when we say co-creative, let's make sure we live up to those words. Let's make sure we live up to collaborative. And for me, it's not so much the council participation, but community voices that we heard all year long about fire, and this is an opportunity for education, shared values, discussion. So what do they say? I'm going to hold you accountable and capable. And I think those two things apply when we put things in language to make sure we live up to it.
And I'll continue off the thought that Deshaun was saying in terms of making sure that this is, we're bringing in the community members who, you know, were very, they were really concerned about what was happening. And this is an opportunity for them to really get involved and an opportunity for us to, you know, to create that transparency and as well as community engagement. But I'm happy with how the charter and the memo has turned out, and I will talk about it during my report tonight so that the council is aware that it's coming to the committee of the whole on the 26th and that the whole council will get to weigh in on it at that time. Sound good?
Thank you very much. Before we close up, I would like to just recognize that Jake Berry is on this call as well as President Booth. So I want to thank them for being here and listening in because they both play a big part in this.
Thank you both. All right. Well, we have a couple minutes to spare before the next meeting. Thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. I'll see you later.
Thank you, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.